Hey, welcome to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Got a special guest on the phone today, Josh Zarichny of Zarichny Outfitting and Consulting and Alberta Goose Outfitters. There in Canada, Josh and I have hunted moose together with my dad a couple years ago, and I'm going to be going back up with him this fall to chase moose in the rut. Big thank you to our show sponsors, Shooting Performance Institute, Battleborn Tree Service, Truck Envy, and Rightful Liberty Arms. Without further ado, Josh, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Henry.
Yeah, absolutely. This was a long time coming, man. I know you're busy running around the woods up there. What do you usually start your season with as far as clients go up there?
For us personally, we start off with, we get into our moose season in late September, and elk in early September as well.
Oh, okay. Not until September. Do you do any spring bear stuff? Is that a thing up there?
Yeah, we get into some spring bear. I've been trying to work away from that. Normally, I get booked with different outfitters as the guide to do our sheep season out here in Alberta and surrounding provinces. But last year, I was up in Yukon. Last year before that, I was in Northwest Territory. So I've got a few different outfits that I work with up in Canada for different hunts. So I normally work for them when that falls out of our own season. So I'm busy doing that, yeah.
And I think last time I was up there hunting with you, we were talking sheep hunting, and I was mentioning how it's such a one-off special thing here in Nevada. And I think you dropped on me that up there in Alberta, you can hunt sheep basically every year, or if you're successful, every other year.
Yeah, in Alberta, we got it. It's a gravy train. You know, in Alberta, we have the opportunity to shoot a ram every year, unless we get one, and then it's every second year.
Yeah, man, over-the-counter sheep tags, that's incredible. Without putting the cart before the horse and getting into some of your guiding experience and your outfitting business, how'd you get started in hunting as a kid? Was it a family thing, or was it something you did on your own?
Yeah, so I grew up in Dauphin, Manitoba, in northern Manitoba, and that's kind of what I did as a kid. You know, I grew up hunting squirrels and pretty much living out in the bush, my family hunted. My dad was a big hunter growing up. My grandfather is still an avid whitetail hunter out there. And that's been, I think, throughout my life, the one thing that's maintained consistency throughout my life is I always hunted.
Is whitetail the big thing out there?
Yeah, man. But I was amazed. Like, our whitetail out there was like 150, 160, 140 even. Like, the genetics just weren't there for big whitetails. And I remember when I moved to Meadow Lake, Saskatchewan, we really got to see like the 170s, 180s, 190 class whitetail of different genetics. So, and I've been fortunate enough to move around Canada, so I've got to hunt lots of different areas and opportunities. And that's just something I've always maintained consistency with in my life. One of the few things I've done every year religiously is wait for the hunting season.
Now, how'd you make the transition from, okay, this is something I'm passionate about, I like doing this, I do it all the time, now I want to make a job out of it? I ask every guest that's gone into outfitting or guiding the same question, because it's always fascinating to me. Without going way off the rails, at one point in my life, I worked in the hunting industry for a firearms manufacturer because I thought, man, this is something I'm really into. I like doing this. And what I came to realize is I can't mix business and pleasure. For me, it was like I was always on the road during hunting season. I was standing around talking about hunting, but I wasn't actually doing it. And now that's like the manufacturing side, obviously guiding slightly different. But what clicked in your brain to go from, hey, I love doing this, now I want to make a career of it as a guide?
I think at the time, like I'd always hunted, and actually I was working, I totally took a different direction right out of school. I was going into finance and working at the bank, and I had saved up most of my vacation to take November off to go hunting. And I was out elk hunting with a friend of mine who was a guide, and we were just on a personal elk hunt, and we had gotten a call from an outfitter that he worked for that one of his clients had shot an elk and needed help tracking it. So we quit hunting that afternoon and went to go look out, give him a hand. And I went with the outfitter, and my friend went with the client, and me and the outfitter found that elk. And by the time everything was said and done, everybody was back. We had taken pictures, and I had started skinning and caping it for the clients. And then I was offered a job with them that season to guide an elk hunt. And that was kind of my first introduction to guiding. So I had taken it hesitantly because I didn't know what I was up against. But I ended up having a blast that first hunt. And it's been history since. You know, I fell in love with it. The connections that this industry has gotten me. And just the fun of it, you know, I realized then that this is what I wanted to do, and I was going to put everything on the line to do it. Now, that's been easier said than done. You know, when we first started, I remember first guiding, you know, it was almost impossible to get going because you were calling guys wanting to work with outfits with no experience, right?
Right.
And slowly, as you kept putting your nose to the grindstone and keep consistency with it, you know, you start getting more experience and meeting more people, and then it goes on from there.
Predominantly elk guiding at first. You know, this is that naive thing I have being from the States, is I think of, you know, elk's a big thing down here, Wyoming, Montana, Nevada, obviously, Arizona, New Mexico, etc. I don't think of Canada as like a real destination elk place, but apparently you stayed pretty busy guiding for elk up there.
Yeah, so we have, I mean, it's nothing compared to like New Mexico or Colorado at all, and that's where your big elk are, definitely, for sure. But Alberta does have a substantially sustainable population of bulls up here, and it's people do book hunts for them. They're not, like I said, if you're looking for the record, like your big Boone Crockett's are definitely New Mexico or Colorado, but we do have a healthy population of elk up in Alberta.
And just Alberta or other provinces as well?
Other provinces, well, it's not as heavily advertised probably as Colorado or New Mexico, but we definitely do have elk up here. Moose is our number one. I think everyone comes up to Alberta basically to hunt moose, and that's our real our one animal that we really like to hunt up here is our moose population. But yeah, we definitely do have really good population of elk.
So those first years guiding predominantly elk, did you do anything else, any bear or deer, moose, any of that?
Moose and bears, yeah, I did. That's when I started. Well, we had always, like, growing up in Manitoba, pretty much everyone, you know, we lived off moose in the winter up north. Every, you know, if we didn't get one, a family member did, and the meat was split amongst the family. But yeah, my first years guiding were for black bear, moose, and elk.
Black bear, moose, and elk predominantly at first. Now, let me ask you real quick, and we're going to sidebar, I guess, a little bit, but do you guys bait for bear up there?
We do. And I'll tell you two things, Henry. I have baited black bears for years. I love the process of baiting black bears in the spring. You know, this year we had a late spring, so we had to snowshoe our baits in. And I love that, you know, going to check your cameras, going to check your baits, and, you know, seeing your first bears waking up, and as the spring opens up, your boars start to wake up, and then the rut begins, and the boars start chasing the sows. That's, I think, a great, great hunt for anybody, especially an introductory hunt to black bear hunting, because they are, and it still gets my heart pumping. I've been doing this for quite some time, but my favorite hunt for black bears is a spot stalk, to be honest with you. That's just, if you can get on a big color phase or a big boar, and, you know, you close the distance within 20, 30 yards, you're on the same ground level as him. That gets the heart pumping pretty good.
Yeah, right. And I'm not, believe me, I love spot and stalk hunting, but I also like the opportunities that baiting for bears provides, as far as like seeing a lot of bears, making sure you're taking a mature boar, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not anti-baiting for bears at all. I think it's one of the more ethical ways to hunt bears. I'm also, I don't know, do you guys run them with hounds up there or no?
We actually just started. Yeah, we have the zone that I have my elk tags in, actually, is you're allowed to hound hunt black bears. I have not done that yet. I do not have the dogs for that. I think if I stick my dog on a bear, the bear would chase the dog, not the opposite way. But
yeah. Yeah. And let me tell you, being friends with some houndsmen, holy smokes, is that a full-time gig. I like my bird dogs, but I'm not about to go down the route of having a bunch of hounds at my house.
Yeah, that's a full-time job in itself.
We are coming up on a break here. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. More with Josh Zarichny when we come back. Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday. Thank you to Shooting Performance Institute, Battleborn Tree Service, Truck Envy, and Rightful Liberty Arms for sponsoring the show. Special guest this Sunday, Josh Zarichny of Zarichny Outfitting and Consulting and Alberta Goose Outfitting in Canada. Now, Josh and I have hunted together, like I mentioned on that first segment, and then I'm going to be hunting with him again come October, chasing moose during the rut. Josh, we went through some of your guiding experience, how you got started. When did the gears start turning as far as, hey, okay, I like guiding, but maybe I'm going to become an outfitter? What happened there to make you decide to do that?
I think it's really tough to be a guide, you know, especially if you want to do it full time. It's a big commitment, right? Because you're writing off, if you want to guide full time, that means you're working for your outfits in your area throughout the season. But the biggest challenge for a guide is, what do you do in the off season? Because most guys have either their side gigs where they're electricians or welders. They do this and they guide in the off season. But for me, I wanted to just go all in and do as much as I could. So when I started wanting to outfit, was really looking at, this is what I want to do with my career. And I had talked to other outfitters who I worked with, and that's how they did it, was guide for X amount of years full time and then eventually get in. But you know, it was a hard thing to break into. It's not an easy industry to step foot in. It was challenging at first to get in.
The outfitting business, let's see, we hunted together in 2024, and I think you had mentioned back then you were thinking about doing it. Was last season your first full season as an outfitter?
No, this season is.
This season's your first season as an outfitter.
This
okay.
Our first season. Yeah.
Did you do the Spring Bear as an outfitter this year?
Yeah, we had our Spring Bear this year.
Okay, so that was the introduction to, like, hey, this is outfitting, and you're still doing it. You're still enjoying it?
Yeah, this has been years in preparation, Henry. You know, and it's lining up as we've all watched the auctions at the cheap shows. The allocations around the world are not cheap. And for me, I think what was really more important for me was wanting to make sure that if we are going to offer hunts in Alberta, that we're offering quality tags and not just selling over-the-counter hunts that, you know, your chances of seeing something are slim to none. You know, we actually wanted to save up and be able to purchase tags that are in a high management zone.
So as the outfitter, you actually purchase the tags from the government of Alberta, or how does that work?
So in Alberta, we're fortunate enough to purchase through other outfitters. And I know in BC, there's each province has it set up a bit differently. Alberta makes it a bit easier for an outfitter to start outfitting, but you have to have the relationship to do it. You have to have the relationship with your clients. You have to have the relationship with other outfitters in the industry. And we are governed by APOS, our Alberta Professional Outfitter Society, that regulates everything.
Oh, gotcha. Now, is it, you got to take a test? What's the process like going from guide to outfitter?
You need to buy insurance. Insurance isn't cheap.
Oh, yeah.
You also need to sign off on your ability and your qualification that you've earned, you know, a name is earned as an going from a guide to an outfitter, that they feel confident in giving you those permissions.
Okay, so you, and now is that like an annual process you guys go through, or is that, what's the recertification like, or once you have it, you have it?
Once you have it, you have it.
Good start to the season with Spring Bear stuff. What are you doing like this time of year? I'm assuming Spring Bear is over. Are you kind of switching gears, getting camps set up for the fall?
Yeah, we're getting our camps set up. A lot of it's just our maintenance and logistics right now. You know, we're out scouting, putting up the trail cams, getting camps ready, cutting firewood, setting in our guides and learning the zones of where they're going to be. And really, I have in September, I got a sheep hunt that I'm going off on. So that's the first draw for me, but then after that, we're off to the races.
Okay, going on a sheep hunt, stone sheep, correct, or Rockies?
Bighorn.
Rocky Mountain Bighorn. Oh, okay. Do you have thin horn sheep in Alberta?
No, we just have bighorn.
Just bighorns. Okay. And now, I think you and I talked last time we hunted together, but those are not inexpensive hunts, correct?
No, you're looking at over $100,000.
Yeah.
Come hunt. Yeah.
So that is like a once in a lifetime hunt for a lot of people, unless you're, Jimmy John's, and you got deep pockets and a big gut. No, I'm kidding. Very, very cool. Now, how do you pick up those tags? Is it the same thing? You get that sheep tag from another outfitter?
So that outfitter's hired me to guide that hunt for him.
Oh, gotcha.
So I've got that one before my season starts off here.
You know, this leads me into that thing. I always wonder, I'm kind of weird about who I hunt with and how we hunt, and I kind of have my little own personal filtering of people. But when you're doing it for a living as a guide or an outfitter, do you have like a checklist you send people, especially like for these sheep hunts where the physical demand is pretty high? What do you look for as far as a client showing up prepared in sheep camp?
I think it's that, you know, and I've seen it go both ways, ironically. Like, I've guided guys that are in better shape than I am, you know, and I'm dragging my butt up the mountain and they're just like Iron Man going up this
cruising.
Up and then I've also got a guy who like showed up and hadn't been on the treadmill at all with the pack, you know, so it really is my advice to any guy that's showing up on a sheep hunt just to be in the best, like be in better shape than you think you need to be, number one.
Yeah.
And also, it's not even about like the physicality of it. It's the mental drain that 14 days is a lot for most people on the mountain. You know, you're constantly, it's a mental game. There's you're climbing, you know, there's rain days. There's times where, you know, you might have a horse wreck that something gets hurt on it. Like, you hope that doesn't happen, but it's all the possibilities of being outside in the wilderness, you know, or, you know, you paid X amount of dollars to go on the sheep hunt and it's day 8 or 9 and you're starting to stress that you haven't seen one yet. But, you know, showing up, listening to your guide and being responsible for your own physical fitness and mental preparedness goes a long way into making sure a successful hunt happens.
Across the board, and I kind of pick out sheep because of the physicality of it, and I know there's a lot more preparation, but I'm sure across the board for elk, moose, anything else, you kind of have that expectation of like, hey, you're going to show up and we're going to hunt our tails off. I think I told the story on the show of sitting there that last night hunting with you and just freezing cold. And I think I gave you props too, because I said, man, this poor guy was out there until the 11th hour with me jackhammering on the muskeg because we were so dang cold. So across the board, you kind of expect people to show up with a certain level of physical fitness.
I do and I don't. I mean, the physical fitness part of it is good. And also, I'm more than happy to take somebody out for their first time. There is no expectation, you know, and I think this is the process of hunting, is that you're going to learn that. You know, if you show up on a sheep hunt or even a moose hunt, you're not prepared to do it. If you want to do it again, the next time you're going to know what to do, you know, and that's
right.
Just through suffering that you learn that.
Yeah, I think now October shouldn't be as bad as last time I was up there with you, but I'm definitely going to pack a couple extra down layers because, man, that was cold. That was cold.
Yeah, well, I don't mean suffering in the way that most people would think, but if you don't bring a warm enough jacket and you come up to Alberta in the fall, you're going to remember to bring a warm jacket next time you come up here, you know?
Well, I even packed, I had down pants, I had down jacket, it's just that humid, or I'll call it damp cold that we don't get, you know, it gets cold here in Nevada, but you know, a humid day is like 20% humidity. Man, when you're sitting on like a muskeg up there, that damp cold just settles into your bones.
Yeah. Yeah, this year we'll have it because you guys were here in November, so that's a tough hunt in itself because the rut's over, the moose aren't rutting anymore. It's like, it's not bad if you're moving, but it's when you start sitting that it gets into your bones, you know, and that's for most people. It's a mental thing at that point, especially for you, Henry. You sat in a tree stand literally all day.
Yeah,
I have to give you credit for that because that was, I don't know if I could have done that, you know, the want to kill is there. But that was a cold day.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I'm too dumb to quit. So, yeah, if my guide says, hey, we're sitting here, you're going to look here, like, perfect, man. You tell me when you want me to stop. I'll just go until whenever. But I hear the music. So we have got to take a quick break. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. More with Josh Zarichny when we come back. Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. If you miss a segment of the show or an entire show, you can always go to 991fmtalk.com, click on the podcast tab, or search Nevada Backcountry in Apple Podcasts. We are joined by Josh Zarichny of Zarichny Outfitting and Consulting and Alberta Goose Outfitting on the show this Sunday. Josh and I hunted moose together a couple years ago, and I'm going back up with him this October to chase moose during the rut. Now, Josh, we've kind of covered your hunting experience, guiding experience, getting into outfitting, all this stuff. talked a little bit about the physicality of some of these hunts. One thing I forgot to ask about on the last segment, the shooting component. I know when we got to camp, you had my dad and I check our zeros. What are your expectations as far as clients showing up, yardages, accuracy, all that stuff?
I think the first choice always when you're coming up to do an international hunt is looking at your rifle selection. You know, I always say to bring, people always ask, you know, what kind of caliber do I need? And the truth is, and I would say anything above 308, but bring the gun you're most comfortable shooting. If you can tack it at 100 yards every time, it's more or less about shot placement with big game in Canada. You don't need an elephant gun, you know, right, to shoot a moose, but you do need something with a little bit of oomph behind it. And that's kind of where, once our clients get to camp, we take them down to the range and zero them in at 100. I try not to get anything past that for shooting. You know, we're not going to be reaching out to 400, 500, 600 yards per moose. Your dad did shoot a moose. I think it was at 160, 170 yards in the muskeg.
Yeah.
But as long as you're comfortable with your gun, man, that's the biggest thing that I suggest is bring something. Before you come, make sure you're shooting it. You know, don't bring it out of the box when you get here and work on it. You know, take a couple boxes of shells and really get comfortable with it before you come up.
Is there any caliber that guys show up with? Where do you draw the line as far as like, this is too light for moose?
It depends. Like, I've seen guys bring up like a 6.5 Creedmoor for moose, and I always kind of like, you know, we're going to be tracking something. But, or a 45-70, you know, it's got the power. A lot of guys do bring a 45-70 because they do think it's got the power to bring it down, but they're not that good. Like, they're good for close range stuff. I mean, man, if we're whacking a bull at like 50 yards, sure. But if you're reaching out to 100, like, it just loses the power. And that's where it's like, I always, anything like a 308, anything with like 30-06, you know, 7 mil, 7 mag are all good calibers, but anything below that kind of 308 line, it's, I'd say, a bit iffy for moose.
That's what I brought. Well, I'm bringing the same gun. I love that thing, but that Seekins in 7 PRC, that's what I brought on that last hunt. And I kind of look at that as like, outside of chasing, you know, maybe a big grizzly in Alaska or something, I always tend to think the 7 PRC is plenty for whatever you need to shoot.
Yeah. A lot of it, I think, is shot placement, too.
Oh, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Put him down. Yeah.
Yeah. A 338 in the back hip is going to be a lot worse than a 243 through the lungs.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, what about archery stuff?
Yeah. I've guided lots of guys from moose and archery. That's actually a nice hunt, too, because you have to be a lot more up close and personal. You know, a rifle hunt, you know, you can tack them at a couple hundred yards or 100. We try to get them at 100 yards. But with the archery hunt, yeah, you definitely need to close the distance a bit more. And that can get the heart pumping, too. You know, you can get a big rutting bull that his eyes are rolling to the back of his head, and, you know, he's mad that you're grunting at him in the bush. That's a fun hunt as well.
Fair warning, Josh, both my dad and I are talking. I think my dad is committed, like he's out shooting his bow every day. I think he's going to bring his bow, and I talked about bringing my bow as well. Now, bow hunting in Alberta, you require an additional, not tag, but like a certification or something?
Yeah, it's just a bow permit, so it's a $10 fee that you have to pay to be able to shoot an animal with your bow.
Well, yeah, like I said, I think both my dad and I are going to bring bows with us. You know, for me, I'm kind of like, if something shows up at 100 yards or whatever, like I'm just going to whack it with a rifle. However, if we are, which I assume hunting the rut, going to be calling them in to closer distances, I might be tempted to take one with a bow. Now, what do you recommend as far as bow setup, arrow weight, any of that, or do you not?
It's been years since I've bow hunted.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
At one time, you know, that's the area I'm not too well versed in. At one time, I actually went to the Junior Olympics for archery when I was a kid.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
Yeah. But to talk about weights and stuff like that, my mind has just not been there in the last 5 years.
Gotcha. Okay. Like I said, we might try to get it done with a bow, but I got no problems getting it done with a rifle. As far as the Alberta goose aspect, why the separate business? Why the separate outfitter? Do you keep just big game on one and then waterfowl on the other?
So we're operating two different. The Zurichny Outfitting and Consulting is our kind of umbrella of what we do.
Okay.
We offer outfitting. We also offer consulting for other outfits. across the world. So we are working with outfitters in New Zealand and Africa currently to sell some of their hunts. And for Alberta, yeah, we started Alberta Goose Outfitters. So we are offering waterfowl hunts. But if you do Google us, Drichny Outfitting Consulting does come up under Alberta Goose Outfitters.
I'm assuming a different area of the province entirely for waterfowl stuff.
Yeah, so we hunt pretty much all over Alberta. But for our waterfowl hunts, we're in the central flyway of Alberta. So we have a really neat spot that we're looking forward to getting kicked off.
I'm going to put you on the spot, Josh.
Yeah.
What is your favorite species for you personally to hunt?
Oh, man, mule deer.
Mule deer. Down. Okay.
Yeah, we've got some. I love moose, but I've done it so much. You know what I mean? Like, I love guiding moose. But for me, like, I drew a moose tag. I drew three tags this year. I drew a cow elk tag, a bull moose tag, and a mule deer tag. And I was jumping out of my boots when I finally drew that mule deer, because that means that I can finally go after it, like a 200-inch southern Alberta mule deer, which is, like, I've been building up my priority points for the last 8 years on that thing. So when I pulled that tag this year, now it sucks because I drew three tags in my busiest year probably yet I've had. So it's going to be a tough year trying to get them all done. I don't think I'll be able to get the other two, but I definitely want to try and get that November mule deer this year.
Yeah. Now, what about, you said guiding for moose is fun. What's your favorite species to guide for?
Probably, yeah, moose or sheep. I think that sheep is such a challenging hunt in itself, you know, and it's such a reward when you do shoot one. Like, yeah, I love it. I love watching, like, because you basically take the client through a journey when you're going through it. You know, I think a part of a guide is, you know, whether you're chasing your first animal or the trophy of a lifetime, you know, the goal is the same, providing an honest, hardworking, world-class experience. You know, and once you get to put that all together on the mountain, you know, it's something that's really special. I don't think, and for the guide and the client, I don't think you forget that moment.
I'll tell you, I think I was more excited when my wife drew her California bighorn tag than she was. Yeah. I'm like you. I like just going, and it's almost the fun of sheep hunting for me is not having the pressure like, oh, I've got the tag in my pocket. I've got to, you know, I got to get this done, this, that, and the other thing. I like just going and helping and watching. For me, that's the fun of it. Like, there's no pressure. I just get to look at sheep and try to help out where I can. So yeah, totally understood on that. I don't think of Alberta, this is that, forgive me, but being from the States, you know, in Nevada here, we chase mule deer at like 9,000, 10,000 feet up, you know, above the timberline in some cases. It's like a high mountain hunt for us. Now, we do get those lowland desert bucks, but driving through Alberta where we were last year, it looks more like whitetail country to me, but you guys grow pretty big mule deer up there.
Oh, yeah. You got to come down south, though. You got, where I live down in Medicine Hat, like, there are some giants that live here. We have the coolies.
Oh, yeah.
Kinda
okay.
Like the desert down here. So, we do, yeah, we're right against that Montana border by the Sweetgrass Hills, and there are some gigantic mule deer that get bred out here.
And that's all spot and stock stuff? You're not necessarily hunting them out of tree stands or any of that?
That's all spot and stock, yeah.
Ah, very,
yeah,
very cool.
The land is as flat as can be, except for coulees that you walk across. But yeah, it's a totally different. Alberta is a pretty diverse province to hunt in Canada. Like, you have your desert. I call it desert. It's not like the Nevada desert at all, but we call it the desert down here because it's our dry area of the province. But yeah, we have our desert. We have our mountain range where you have our elk, moose, white-tailed deer. You even have, like, up in around where we were last time hunting, you do have your mountain mule deer and, like, mountain white-tailed deer.
Okay.
The mountain mule deer don't get as big as the southern Alberta mule deer, but they get some pretty decent bucks that come out of there. And then you get up north where we're going is a completely different system. Like, remember, last time we hunted a lot of muskegs. Now, where we're going this time, it's all muskeg. Like, we're right up in the top corner underneath the Northwest Territories hunting moose this year, so...
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to hunting the muskegs again. That's such a unique experience for a Nevada guy that I'm used to, you know, sage flats or big mountains and everything. So for me, walking around on what amounted to like a waterbed of grass, I was going, man, this is kind of weird, but very, very cool. Well, hey, we have got to take a quick break. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. My favorite segment of the show, the final segment where we try to wrap everything up, is coming up in a minute. final segment of Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday. Sincere thank you to our show sponsors, Shooting Performance Institute, Rifle Liberty Arms, Truck Envy, and Battle Born Tree Service. And thank you to all of you who take time out of your day to listen to the show. Dave Catalano is still out chasing elk, as far as I know. Hopefully he's getting that done out there. But in lieu of Dave, I've got a special guest on the show today, Josh Zarichny of Zarichny Outfitting and Consulting and Alberta Goose Outfitters is joining me. Now, I hunted moose with Josh a couple years ago. I'm going back up. Well, apparently you can stand one more hunt with me, Josh, and I can stand one more hunt with you. I had a heck of a good time that last time, and I always appreciate, I'm one of those people, like, I'll just go until either, hey, the season ends, last light, whatever, like, just go. And I appreciated how hard you worked on that hunt, because, man, as I learned, post-rut moose hunting is, you're looking for a needle in a haystack, and even though moose are giant critters, that is some thick country up there. So kudos to you, man. You worked your tail off in less than ideal conditions when we were up there. And such a departure for me from, you know, sitting there with my little jet boil on a mountainside somewhere cooking dinner. Man, you made phenomenal meals every single night. You made breakfast every morning. For me, it was like, holy smokes, I have made it. This is awesome. So I'm looking forward to getting back up there with you. Tell me a little bit, what do you look for as far as moose hunting, type of person you want to bring? You got any good stories you can share on the show as far as either hunts gone awry or successful hunts that you didn't think you were going to pull off?
Successful hunts that I didn't think I was going to pull off. I think my first year up in the Yukon was such a, you're a small fish in a big pond, you know, up there. There's so many good guides that, you know, I think that's where a lot of people as guides cut their teeth is up there. You know, and it was kind of neat because the first time I went up there, I got to look at some of the pictures of on the walls of the cabins. And these cabins are like from like, you know, the 1950s, 60s, 70s were built. And a lot of the old outfitters that I originally started working for had worked there when they were my age. So that was cool. But I think a lot of stuff like up there was, I guided my first stone sheep up there.
Very cool.
That was a pretty incredible experience. You know, we were lucky enough to guide that. And I think that was the only sheep that I cried on the mountain for, you know, and I don't even want to admit that, but I think that was just, it was, you know, I hadn't gotten that much notice that I was going to guide that with another guide that had gotten hurt. So they flew me in there to guide it. And, yeah, that was a pretty rewarding hunt for me for sure. And just to kind of set my level of, as for me, I think that sheep hunts are kind of one of the toughest hunts you can do. But after a long season, you know, to finally get a big round with a client definitely was one of my favorite moments of last year's season. Kind of funny stories, man, that I have is, like, I remember when I was first guiding, like, first year bear guiding, and we had a client that, where I was running three clients just to me, and I was running, like, it was the end of the season, like, I was running my tail off to make sure this would happen. It was, like, one of my last groups of the year, And we had one guy, like, I can't remember his name, but this guy loved to talk. Like, he would sit there in the lunch hall and just talk for hours with other guys, which is okay. And, you know, yeah. I think it was like 3-4 o'clock and I was trying to get him out the door. Like, we got to go because we still have like a 2-hour drive to the stand and you're not going to have that much time hunting. And so I was in a rush and got him in the truck and away I went down the road. And so I drove 2 hours to our bait stand and I get out, get the quad unloaded, and he's like, where's the bait? And I totally forgot, like, the donuts and all, like, the grain and stuff like that. So we had went to some of the clients who went fishing earlier on in the day. So I grabbed, I still had the fish.
Oh, yeah.
And the tail in the back of my truck. So I told them, I was like, you know what, man? Like, bears are like people. If I just fed you donuts every day, like, you wouldn't want donuts. So we're going to try fish today. And so I had, like, just threw these, like, fish guts everywhere trying to get the bear. And, well, I'd be darned if he didn't shoot a massive boar off that night. And when he got back to the lodge, he was telling all the other guides, you know, like, you got to get your guide to use fish. Like, that's where it is. And I think everyone else knew in the lodge that I'd just forgotten the donuts. Right. In a rush.
Right. Yeah. Now, have you tried that again, using fish, or do you usually stick to donuts nowadays?
You know what? We've tried using fish before. They don't, for whatever reason, that day, beaver is actually the best bear bait that you can use.
Oh, no kidding. Why is that?
Yeah. I think it's a natural, it's a high protein, natural meal that they have readily available. Like, I don't think it's easy for bears to get beavers.
Okay.
Number one, I think they have to work at it quite a bit to get into, like, if you think they have to get into the beaver lodge, which is not an easy task because that thing's stitched together pretty tight with mud and sticks. Like, it's not an easily accessible thing. But the other thing is that the carcasses stink. Like, that is the best smelling. I think that bears in itself, or how I normally bait them, is just usually off smell.
Right.
And you have food there, but you're using a lot of, like, high scent stuff. Like, you're using scented, like, caramel or something sweet that will bring them in. But I found that if you can take the casters off out of the back of the beaver and kind of make a boil out of that, so you make a bit of a liquid and spray that around. And then if you use the beaver meat, hang it up in a tree. And you get a really windy day. The first night might not be that great, but the second day you'll have bears, you know. And I actually scared myself. I don't get scared by bears very often. Like, I've been charged by grizzlies and black bears in Alberta. I keep my wits about them for sure. Like, I definitely don't want to go up and pet them, but
right.
I'm no stranger to bears. But this year, bear hunting, I had 9 black bears, and I was in a ground blind at my stand. Like, and that was like, and there were some big bears that were like, they were getting pretty curious to me, and it was getting dark. So I was, I can admit, I was even getting a little bit nervous. But.
a little stressed about the walk out.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I remember hunting up there with you. Now, Sundry, one of the towns in the area we hunted, that's like one of the bear attack capitals of the world, right?
Yeah. Alberta's just started. We opened up a problem bear tag.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Our province, where we're starting to eradicate some of these bears that have attacked people. Because what was happening was that we would have a grizzly bear attack in Alberta, and then the fish and wildlife officers, because we weren't allowed to harvest them, they'd quit. I think they quit hunting them in 2007, if I'm stand corrected. But what would happen was these bears would attack somebody, there'd be a kill, and they would relocate these bears. Well, what happened was these bears that they relocated after they attacked somebody were attacking people again. So now they have options but to put them down. So instead of just the conservation putting them down, they actually opened up a tag where now they're letting residents hunt the bears that have that are becoming a problem.
Gotcha. Well, shoot, Josh, we're coming up to the end of the show here. I am sincerely looking forward to October. I can't wait to get back up there with you, man, and chase moose. Why don't you go ahead, for listeners that are interested in one of these hunts, why don't you plug how people can get in touch with you?
Yeah, so we're online. If you Google Zurichny Outfitting and Consulting, it'll come up, as well as if you Google Alberta Goose Outfitters will come up. If anybody wants to give me an email or a phone call, our email is zurichnyoutfitting@gmail.com. And my phone number is 403-878-2164.
Now, you're going to have to spell Zurichny, Josh.
Oh, yeah. It's Zarichny.
One more time, Josh.
Zarichny.
Perfect. Hey, thank you very much for doing the show with me, Josh. And now, before we go to break here, what species do you outfit for?
We outfit for moose, elk, mule deer, white-tailed deer, black bear, winter wolf, and waterfowl in Alberta.
Well, hey, I can't recommend Josh enough. Like I said, over the years, I tend to do most of my own hunting. However, I have hunted with guides, and I'll tell you, for listeners, Josh is a stand-up guy, and he will absolutely work his tail off for you. So, can't recommend you enough. Josh, sincere thanks for doing the show with me, man.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I sure appreciate it.